we have been studying this text, Tenzo Kyokun in Japanese, or Instruction for Tenzo. This is an instruction written by the founder of Soto Zen tradition in Japan, whose name was Dogen. And Tenzo is a person who is in charge of cooking. So this is a teaching for cook in a Zen monastery. Last week, we started to read the text, and this is the introduction. What is Tenzo? And he said, he said, unless we allow body citta, or body mind, or awakening mind, you know, this work in the kitchen is really hard work, and yet it's a waste of energy. So to have bodhicitta, or citta means mind, and body is awakening. Sometimes this is translated into English as way-seeking mind. It means aspiration to search the way. What is the way? And we, you know, study the way and practice the way. That motivation is called bodhicitta. And I introduce three aspects of the bodhicitta from Dogen's teaching. One is the mind that sees the impermanence of all things. And Dogen said, when we really see the impermanence, that means we may die tomorrow or even today, because everything is changing and we cannot expect when we die. That means we have no time to waste. And that means that awakening to that impermanence allow us to focus on what we are doing at this moment. So being right now, right here, and be alert and attentive to whatever we are doing. That is one of the meanings of mindfulness, being free right now, right here, what we are doing. That is possible because of the awakening, seeing impermanence and seeing there's no time to waste. And second aspect is compassion. That means to see, to awake bodhicitta or body mind is to take a vow to what was Dogen's expression? He said, to allow body mind or bodhicitta is to vow to save others before oneself. Before, I don't like this word, this English word save, as usually said, but this means to help others to cross over the river between samsara and nirvana. So help other beings to cross over this river. That means allow other being or help other people to be released or liberated from the suffering of samsara. So he said, to allow the body mind is to vow to save others before oneself. Before we are liberated, we try to other people be liberated or help other people to release, to be released. And to actually work to fulfill the vow, not only allow the vow, but we have to actually really, you know, do it using our body and mind. And that is another aspect of bodhicitta. So to see impermanence is a kind of wisdom, and to work for others is compassion. So bodhicitta has two aspects of wisdom and compassion. And third aspect I introduced last week was Fat Dogen discussed in another section of this Dogen's Pure Standard, and that is the mind which value the tradition, Buddhist tradition, in the case of Dogen, this Zen tradition, and our practice. And Dogen said that is like ordinary tea and rice. That means nothing special. We, day after day, you know, wake up and practice meditation or zazen, and doing things as a practice. And this practice is nothing special. So Dogen said, call this ordinary tea and rice. That means we drink every day and we eat every day. So we have to keep this tradition, keep or maintain this tradition and transmit this to the next generation. This, aspiration is also bodhicitta. And another point I didn't talk because I didn't have time last week is in Shobo Genzo Shinjin Gakudo. Shinjin is body and mind. Gaku is study. And Do is way. So we study the Buddha way with our entire body and mind. And he discusses what is body and what is mind. And his interpretation or insight about body and mind is really different from our common sense of this, you know, body and this mind. Anyway, in this chapter of Shobo Genzo, Dogen said, at the very time, at the very moment of arousing awakening mind or bodhicitta, arousing bodhicitta, the entire Dharma world is nothing other than arousing awakening mind. So when we arouse this bodhicitta that has three aspects, wisdom, compassion, and maintaining this tradition, this entire universe becomes the world of arousing bodhicitta. This entire universe becomes bodhicitta. This is the same thing he said about our zazen when in Jiju Zammai. When we sit at that, no matter how short our zazen is, this entire universe becomes enlightenment. And he said the same thing about the bodhicitta. When we allow bodhicitta, this entire universe becomes bodhicitta. Or the world of bodhicitta. When we allow bodhicitta, this entire universe allows bodhicitta with us. So same as, you know, when we are born together with this entire world. And we are living together with this entire world. And we are dying together with this entire world. And so arousing bodhicitta is the same thing. So in that sense, when we practice, this world becomes the world of practice. I think this is what he said in the first paragraph. And today I'd like to start page 34 of this handout, second paragraph. Let me read the second paragraph. When this mountain monk, Dogen, was in Song China, during my spare time, I made inquiries of former tensors with long experience, and they brought up some examples they had seen and heard and related them to me. This guidance is the marrow bequeathed since ancient times by Buddhas and ancestors who had the mind of the way. First of all, you must deeply study the Zennen Shingi. After that, it is necessary to hear discussions about details of the job from former tensors. So Dogen went to China and practiced there for 5 years. And during he was practicing at Chinese monastery, he inquired how tensors works. And this is a kind of a report from Chinese experience. And he asked many questions to the experienced people as tensor. And he said they gave him very good, you know, information. And he said, first of all, if you become a tensor, if you cook in the temple kitchen, you must deeply study the Zennen Shingi. Zennen Shingi is all the kind of regulations in a Zen monastery in China. And when he wrote this book, he started to create his own monastery in Japan. So he wanted to his disciples or monks practice with him to really understand the spirit of Tenzo and other work practice in the monastery. So he asked his students to deeply study what is written in the Zennen Shingi. And also necessary to hear discussions about details of the job from former tensors. So you have to first study the text, then hear from the experienced people about a concrete work in the kitchen. I think there's nothing difficult here, so I go to the next part. From the next section until page, let's see. I think about 37th, he described daily routine of Tenzo's work for one day. So I started, not me, but Dogen started to describe how Tenzo's works throughout a day. So next paragraph. Here is how to fulfill the job for a whole day and night. So the Tenzo works in the night also. This is page 34. First, after lunch, consult with the director and assistant director in their offices to get the provisions for the next day's breakfast and lunch. This includes rice, greens, and other items. After you receive them, carefully protect these ingredients as if taking care of your own eyes. Zen Master Baoming Ren Yang said, "Guard the temple properties as if they were your own eyes. Respect the temple food as if it were for the emperor." This attitude applies to both raw and cooked food. So the day of Tenzo starts after lunch. Actually, the daily schedule within the Zen monastery starts in the evening. Today, we think a day starts in the morning, but in the traditionally, in the Zen monastery, a day starts in the evening. And it starts from evening Zazen. That means even when we are sleeping, that is not a, how can I say, that is still a part of daily practice. So sleeping is not completely a rest, but sleeping is also part of the practice. Monks in the Zen monastery sleep in the monk's hall where they practice meditation and eat and sleep in the same place. So sleeping is also a part of practice. Anyway, so Tenzo's work starts in the afternoon after lunch. First thing that Tenzo do is going to the storage and pick up the food ingredient he can use for tomorrow's breakfast and lunch. In the Buddhist monasteries, traditionally they don't have supper, so only two meals a day. But when it's cold, as Dogen said, somewhere he allows to have a evening food as a kind of a medicine. But formal meals are only two, breakfast and lunch. So first, after lunch, consult with the director and assistant director. Those are people in charge of temple property in their offices to get the provisions for the next day's breakfast and lunch. This includes rice, greens, and other items. After you receive them, carefully protect these ingredients as if taking care of your own eyes. So he said we should take care of Tenzo should take care of all ingredients as their own eyes. That eye is, you know, very important part of our body. Something, you know, come into our eyes without thinking, we try to protect it. In the same way, we should protect the food ingredient. Of course, you know, in the ancient times, they didn't have refrigerator, so they cannot, you know, store, you know, so long. If it's raw things, it's not dried food. And for monks, those food are, you know, gift or a donation from lay people, or fruit of, you know, all the monks' labor. If they grow vegetables, so they same as you know, we have no time to waste. You know, Tenzo has no food to waste. So we have to be really careful to protect the food. And often, you know, in ancient times, they didn't have enough food. There is a story about ancient Chinese Zen master. The monastery received certain amount of rice for 1 year, and the abbot didn't want to ask lay people to make donation, so he made decision to use only this amount of rice, whether they had, you know, small number of people or a big number of people. So he divided this amount, certain amount of rice he received for a year, into 365, you know, portions, and they eat only this amount of rice a day. If, you know, they don't have enough, they don't have many monks, they could eat, you know, cooked rice. If they have more people, they have put more water. If they have one person, you know, added, they added one ladle of water to the rice. So the more they have, you know, more monks they have, you know, the rice become thinner and thinner. And if, because the abbot was very popular master, soon, you know, they had many people, so they keep adding the water, and finally they had only a very thin, like a rice water. That is a kind of a spirit of Zen practice. Of course, today at, you know, big Zen monasteries in Japan, they had a huge refrigerator. here we are. So, tender should protect the food as if foods are Tenzo's own eyes. Zen Master Baoming Renyon said, "Guard the temple properties as if they were your own eyes." So the person and the things, in the case of Tenzo, the food, are not only food, but fire or water or whatever, utensils and firewood. You know, Tenzo needs to really intimate, and there shouldn't be no separation. That is why I said Tenzo's work is a kind of a practice of Jiju Samadhi in our daily lives, same as our Zazen. Respect the temple food as if it were for the emperor. This attitude applies to both raw and cooked food. Then, next paragraph. After all the temple administrators, thereafter, all the temple administrators gather in their office and discuss what combinations of flavors, which vegetables and what breakfast gruel to prepare for the next day. The Zennen Shingi says, decide on the ingredients of the different courses for breakfast and lunch after discussions with all of the temple administrators. The six temple administrators, or Rokuchiji, are the director, Tsusu, assistant director, Kansu, treasurer, Fusu, and supervisor of the monk's conduct, Ino, chief cook, Tenzo, and work leader Shisui. After agreeing on the different courses, write a menu and post it on the signboards at both the abbot's room and the monk's study hall. So next, and the next thing is, Tendo needs to have a meeting with other officers. There are six main officers I already talked as an introduction. These are six main temple officers in the monasteries. And those people get together and make the menu for the next day's meals. So Tenzo cannot make the menu by himself. I think this is another characteristic of the monastery, all people work together. And it's interesting, when they decide the menu, they write the menu on the board at the abbot room and by the monk's study hall. For monks, that they could eat next day is a very important thing. Food is only kind of an entertainment for monks. If you have experience of practice in a monastery, you will understand that. There's no entertainment other than eating. Of course, no TV and no, magazines or newspapers. I think there's nothing difficult in this paragraph. And next paragraph. Next, get ready the following morning's breakfast. Then the Tenzo start to prepare for next morning's breakfast. Select the rice and prepare the vegetables by yourself with your own hands, watching closely with sincere diligence. You should not attend to some things and neglect or be slack with others for even one moment. Do not give away a single drop from within the ocean of virtues. You must not fail to add a single speck on top of the mountain of good deeds. The Zenren Shingi says, if the food is without the excellence of the six flavors and without the endowment of the three virtues, the Tenzo is not serving the community. While examining the rice, watch for sand. While examining the sand, watch for rice. If you minutely observe from different viewpoints without absent-mindedness, then naturally the food will integrate the three virtues and include the six tastes. Of course, the food in the ancient times are different from the food we buy from the supermarket. When we buy food or vegetables from the supermarket, everything is completely cleaned. But those food are just taken from the field or gardens, so they are dirty, and they. In the case of the grains, they are mixed with small stones and dirt, sands, and other part of other plants, and you know that dead body of you know bugs and those things. So first thing the tenants should do is clean up those food ingredients. Even rice, when I cooked at Antaiji in Japan, we bought you know brown rice from a rice shop. Still, you know there are many small stones. So first we have to you know check if there is any stone left in the rice or not, because you know. At the rice shop, you know, they not many many Japanese people eat brown rice. They eat white rice. So the rice shop bought the rice bag, big bag of rice from the farmers, and they refine, they make it white at the rice shop, and they sell the white rice. But because we ate brown rice, we bought the rice before refined. That's why there are many stones still there. So first thing we have to do is, you know, check, pick up the stones from the rice. If, you know, stone is mixed with rice, cooked rice, it, you know, might break our teeth. So it is important to take out all the stones. So select the rice and prepare the vegetables by yourself with your own hands. You know, Tenzo is one of the six major temple officers, so it's a kind of a high-class officer. Other people tend might have, you know, other people, and they the part that Tenzo could use, you know, his people, you know, under him. But Tenzo should finally, you know, check all everything is well done. So watching closely with sincere diligence. And I think at Dogen's monastery, it's not still big. So Tenzo didn't have an assistant. So Tenzo should have, you know, do all these things by himself. Watching closely with sincere diligence. You should not attend to some things and neglect or be slack with others for even one moment. So we have to be very careful and attentive in each moment. No time to waste and nothing to waste. We have to be very careful. Do not give away a single drop from within the ocean of virtues. You must not fail to add a single speck on top of the mountains of good deeds. So, in a sense, we need to have a greed to do good things. You know, as Menzan said, those three poisonous mind, greed, anger or hatred and ignorance. Those are called three poisonous mind, and these are thus source of, you know, suffering or transmigration within samsara. But one of the important Japanese Zen master, whose name was Menzan, said, "We don't, you know, kill those three poisonous mind. But we need to use these three poisonous mind in a positive way. And he said, Menzan said, when we receive the precept, we receive 16 precepts. And 16 precepts are one set of three precepts, that is three refuges. We take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Those are three treasures in Buddhism, and we take refuge in Buddha, in Dharma, and Sangha. That is, the three refuges is first set, and second set is called threefold pure precept. Pure precept, and other ten major precepts. And he discussed that the threefold pure precept, that is, in my translation, first is a precept of embracing all moral codes, and second is the precept of embracing all good dharma. Dharma in here means good actions, so all good actions. And third is the precept embracing all living beings. These three precept means, first we should try not to do any unwholesome, harmful actions. So this is try not to do bad things. And second is not to do bad things is not enough, but we have to do good things. That is the first, second precept means. So we have to be to actively doing good things. If our attitude is just avoid bad things, then this kind of a moral cause or precept can be used as a excuse not to do good things. And we can use, any precept as an excuse not to help others. So second is to do good things. And third is to not to do unwholesome thing and do wholesome thing. Should be for the sake of all living beings, not for the sake of this person as a individual. We have to, as a bodhisattva, we have to help all others. We have to practice for the sake of all beings. Those are threefold pure precept. And Menzan discussed that the first of the three poisonous mind, greed, is used in a positive way as a second precept, that is doing everything good. So we have to be greedy to do good thing. And anger or hatred is used in the opposite way as the first precept, first of those three precepts, that means not doing anything evil or unwholesome. In order to avoid doing unwholesome actions, we need anger or hatred against unwholesome thing, our actions. So we need anger or hatred to practice not doing evil. And to do everything for the sake of all beings, we need ignorance. So ignorance is used for the sake, to do things for the sake of all beings. So in this case, ignorance means there's no separation, no discrimination between self and all other beings. So those three poisonous mind is used in a positive way to maintain and practice these threefold pure precept. That is what Menzan said. And here, I think Dogen Zenji is saying the same thing. We need a greed to do good thing. In a case of Tenzo, to work in a diligent way, in order not to make any mistake, we have to be really careful and attentive. And doing so, we need to be even. We need to use the greed to do even a small good thing to, make the work. Nothing can be perfect, but as close, close to the perfect. So Tendo should be really attentive and devote their entire energy into what they are doing right now, right here. And this is a practice of mindfulness in our very concrete day-to-day life. And Dogen again quotes the Zennen Shingi, and that says, if the food is without the excellence of the six flavors and without the endowment of the three virtues, the Tenzo is not serving the community. So in the case of our Zazen, even if we are mindless and we are sleepy and we actually sleep, or even when our mind is busy and we think, there's no visible result. No one can really see what's happening in our Zazen. But in the case of Tenzo, people know. And, food is really important things for, especially for the monks. So, how the Tenzo worked is really, apparent in the way how the food was cooked and how tasty it is. So the mindfulness or mindlessness of Tenzo while the Tenzo was working is very clear. And all the monks have the same experience as Tenzo. So when we eat, rice cooked by a certain person, we could see how this person worked. So we must be really careful. All people are like a mentor watching. Even they don't really watch how the Tenzo worked in the kitchen, but they could see, how this person worked. Therefore, the rice is in this condition, or rice or soup or other things also. So, working, practice as this kind of work, Tenzo or in any things, is really, helpful, to see how we can be mindless and how we can be mindful. And the result is very obvious, very clear. And we cannot cheat, because the result, the fruit of our work is really there. And the people are waiting. and people can be, the monks can be really, you know, critical against not well-cooked food, because that was very important for all monks. So as a, you know, not only just working, but as a meditation practice, this is really difficult and hard, but really good practice. Please.
You're talking about the result of the mindfulness, and I taught cabinet making apprentices for a long time, and it was the same story with them. Those who were sloppy, their tools were all over the place, drawings were all over the place, clamps were all over the place. The work ended up looking awful, and they said, well, there was a problem with the wood, or there was a problem with this, or there was a problem with that. I said, no, it's not a problem with that. Look at your desk. Look at the work table. There's where the problem is. And it happened every time. And those who were organized, those who were, you know, focused, their work was accurate, clean, precise, well put together. And those who were not, it was a mess.
Right. Same thing. So there's no way to cheat. So, you know, this kind of work is one of the characteristic of Zen practice in a Zen monastery, because in other traditions, especially in Indian Buddhist Sangha, this kind of work was not done. So this part of practice is one of the things, you know, Zen tradition can offer to not only the Buddhist traditions, but also the lay people in the lay society. How can we, you know, work mindfully and make a contribution? So Zen is not simply a meditation practice, but working is also a very important part of Zen practice. So when we see the person's work, we can see how this person practice even Zazen. So, you know, the abbot is often experience of same kind of practice many years. So when the abbot or teacher sees how this person, you know, prepare meals, you know, he could tell, you know, what kind of person is this, and how, you know, this person, even how the person's zazen is. So, because, you know, monks lived in the monastery for many decades, you know, everyone knows everyone, and everyone knows what that result of mindful or mindless work. So there's no way to cheat others. So it's very difficult and yet very, you know, how can I say, educational and beneficial place. If the monastery function in a healthy way, that means all people have this, you know, gather together with bodhicitta for the sake of the practice or dharma. Otherwise, you know, monastery can be the same as mundane world, you know, people in the upper position just use the people in the lower position, and, you know, there's a, you know, power abuse. And, you know, from whatever point Dogen start to talk about koan, or the way how to study koan, and here he start, you know, while examining the rice, watch for sand. While examining the sand, watch for rice. This is really important to study koan. We don't study koan as a part of a, you know, meditation practice, but we use koan as a expression of the reality, same as the, you know, sutras and other Buddhist scriptures. So here Dogen said we have to see, you know, this is one very simple action of Tenzo, just, you know, there is a mixture of rice and stone or sand, and you know, we can eat rice and we cannot eat stones or sand, so we have to, you know, pick up sands or stones from rice, or from another point of view, we pick up rice from sands, and both are true. But when Dogen, you know, discuss about rice and sand, something eatable and something not eatable, something nutritious and something is not, you know, nutritious or beneficial, he's talking about, you know, these three poisonous mind and the three, what is it, pure precept, or we could say bodhicitta, or we can say Buddha nature. Something we have to, you know, protect and nurture or grow, and something we have to, you know, put aside. There's something positive and negative, something healthy and not healthy, something wholesome and unwholesome. You know, these are usually, we call these dichotomies. And, you know, basically Zen teaching or Buddhist teaching is going beyond dichotomy, going beyond, you know, discrimination between good and bad. And so this become a koan. You know, if we do not, if we go beyond discrimination between rice and sand, you know, this is about the next koan story Dogen introduce in the next paragraph. You know, if we go, we need to go beyond, you know, good and bad or any dichotomies. And yet, just going beyond is not enough. We have to, in order to going beyond, we have to see, you know, these two are really dichotomy or not. These two are really dualistic or not. So going beyond discrimination doesn't mean just not forget, just, you know, don't separate rice from sand or sand from rice. But going beyond dichotomy means that it's about the koan story for in the next paragraph, so I don't talk now. But this, please.
Dogen keeps on referring, you know, he does the dichotomy thing,
mm-hmm.
and then he goes, and yet,
mm-hmm.
and there's always a sense of simultaneous,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, so you're watching, you're examining the rice and looking for sand.
Mm-hmm.
When you're examining the sand, you're looking for rice. Mm-hmm. You're not examining the rice looking for sand. You're doing both of those simultaneously.
Yes. So these are all, you know, two sides of one, really one action. Within this one action, there are two sides. We, you know, pick up rice, or separate rice from sand, or separate sand from rice. And yet, you know, so in the case of, well, I talk about this when the Koan, Dogen start, introduce the Koan story. So we have to see from two sides, or not only two, but many possible sides to see one, you know, action, whether this is a wholesome action or not wholesome action. It can be both wholesome and unwholesome at the same time. So we have to be really careful and alert. That means good and bad, and wholesome and unwholesome is not a fixed nature of this one action. But this is good and bad, or unwholesome, is exists only within the sequence. Whether you know, the definition of good and bad in Buddhism is really clear and simple. That is, everything that causes suffering is bad. Everything that cause reduce suffering or cause a cessation of suffering is good. So definition of good and bad, or wholesome and unwholesome, is really clear. But whether this one action cause, you know, suffering or cessation of suffering is not so clear. It can see only within, you know, the sequence. You know, and one action can cause many different, you know, results. So we, you know, we cannot say, you know, I'm, you know, I'm Tenzo, so I'm working hard for preparing meals for the monks in the community, so I'm doing good thing. That is, that can be one aspect of what the Tenzo is doing, but there might be another, you know, sequence this person is doing. You know, for example, I often talk about my experience when I lived in Massachusetts. You know, we bought 5 or 6 acres of land in the woods in the western Massachusetts. And we had nothing else, nothing but trees. So first we cut the trees, and we didn't have well, we didn't have water. So I dug a well. I tried to dug a well with a shovel. That was the only thing I had. And I had, you know, stronger muscle. That was 30 years ago. And I could dug about 10 feet, and I hit the rock, so I couldn't dig anymore. But fortunately, there was water running on the rock, so we could have some water. So we decided making a well. But before we made the well, you know, the hole was filled with water, and a skunk was dead. Drowned. So, you know, what I did was, you know, for the sake of Dharma, to, you know, get water to support our practice. So I have no, you know, bad intention. I thought I'm doing good thing, and I worked really hard, wholeheartedly. And yet, you know, and so as a result, we get some water. But another result was, you know, my, you know, work, you know, kill that small animal. So we have to think whether this is really a good thing, good action, or not good action. Of course, killing is against Buddhist precept. So is this against this action, one single action, evil thing, or against precept, or this is for the sake of Dharma, so it's a good action or not? We cannot tell. Or we should say both. Within, you know, one action, there are two sides, at least, or many other sides, probably. So if I simply think, you know, I'm doing this for the sake of Dharma, so, you know, this is a good thing, and ignore the other, you know, result of my action, then, you know, I'm simply a blind to, you know, see the entire, you know, reality of happening right now, right here. So even, you know, this, you know, very simple action of selecting rice and sand, or digging a well to get water, is not so simple thing. So I think that is what Dogen is saying. We have to see, investigate even one simple action from many different perspectives. And this is about our, you know, basic, the meaning of our practice as a basic teaching of Buddhism. That means, as you know, you know, very basic teaching of Buddha is Four Noble Truths, truth of suffering and cause of suffering, and third truth is cessation of suffering and cause of, or the path to the cessation of suffering. You know, this is very simple and accurate teachings. And in whatever Buddhist tradition, this is a base of teachings. But still, you know, whether, you know, one action is a cause of suffering or a cessation of suffering, this is really a question. It can be both. So, and even if it's really that, you know, within the path to cessation of suffering, to go to that direction is really a good thing or not, is another point we have to think. That means, as a bodhisattva, you know, as many of the Mahayana teachers says, we should stay in this world, in this world of suffering, in order to walk together with all beings and helping all beings, even in a you know, tiny thing. But if we simply going to the cessation of suffering, we may, you know, escape from this world of suffering. Is this good or not? As a bodhisattva precept, bodhisattva practice, this is another thing we have to see our practice. You know, especially in my case, I really didn't want to live in the so-called, you know, Japanese society, you know, so much materialistic. And I couldn't find any meaning to live in that society. So I dropped out from that way of life. But, and that was, I had no choice. That was the only thing I could do when I was a teenager. I escaped. But from where I am now, you know, that was simply escaping. Of course, without that, you know, experience of escaping, I couldn't find another kind of alternative way of life, different from, the life within this huge money-making machine. So to me, that is a very important and necessary process of seeking the way. And yet, escaping is just escaping. And I'm not sure whether it was a good thing or not. And now I think I return to the, society, and working to as many people as possible who are interested in Dharma and Buddhist practice. To do so, I, have been working to create a sangha and establish a temple. So I'm kind of walking to the opposite direction from when I was a teenager. I escaped and now I'm returning too. And yet, I'm not sure whether this is really a good thing or not. But what is good and what is bad, what is wholesome and what is unwholesome, is not so simple. So we have to see from very different perspective without making such a, simple judgment. But we have to see the sequence of, cause and result, and cause and result. Please? Oh, I first.
I want to check my understanding about this.
Mm-hmm.
I had the impression that one could become... more pure or more free from suffering and voluntarily either stay in the world or come back to the world.
Mm-hmm.
That it wasn't necessary to keep problems or hang-ups or defects or whatever you want to call them,
mm-hmm.
in order to do the bodhisattva path, but mm-hmm. that in fact, so that actually going towards cessation isn't an issue unless you're selfishly alone for cessation as a non-bodhisattva.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? I know, karma and rebirth is a large topic.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
But the one thing I can see is we have to, think and observe and from many different perspectives. Life is really not so simple. Okay.
This is my question,
I don't have answer. I think we are always in the process. And trying to do wholesome thing and try not to unwholesome thing. But I think there's some kind of a limit that our judgment, whether it's wholesome or unwholesome, is really true or right or not.
Mm.
From the scum point of view, what I did was really bad, I think. Mm. But as a Buddhist monk, to work hard to establish a practice center or meditation center is a good thing. And that is action based on my vow, Bodhisattva vow, whether this is, this is same as the koan of, the famous koan of Nansen killing the cat. Is killing or expounding or expressing the truth? And it could be both. So it's not a simple thing.
That is the source of I don't know how many of the conflicts that we have with each other. Mm. That fact that we can't tell which is which. Because mm. people have different opinions.
Yeah, that's why we have argument, you know, discussion, argument, even fighting. Mm-hmm. Even among the people who are working for the peace.
Right.
They have conflict and fight. That is a kind of a karma. So we have to be really careful, and what is important is to be flexible and free from even our own point of view or our own kind of a system of value. You know, as a Buddhist, I really think this is a good thing, but from, you know, other perspective, you know, this might be not so good. Please.
On that, to be able to see from several perspectives, mm-hmm. It seems to, it prevents one from making one-sided judgments to see, you know, exactly this and, mm-hmm. and then everything else is shut out.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, it's to see or to be able to see from multiple sides simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
The being able to see from multiple sides simultaneously is very liberating.
Yes, I think it's our actual or very concrete practice of letting go of thought. You know, when we are sitting in the Zendo facing the wall, we let go of thought. Whatever coming up within our mind, we just let go. And when we work in the kitchen, we cannot let go of, you know, this difference between rice and sand or stone. We have to make choice and make, you know, kind of a separation. And yet, whether this, you know, action is right or not right, or good or not good, it's not so clear. So we have to be examine each and every action. And this is kind of a liberation. You know, I don't simply grasp, you know, this is a good thing, so I just do it. Everything against what I'm doing are bad. That kind of fixed idea of good and bad is very different from, you know, Buddhist practice. So there's no such things called fundamentalism in Buddhism. There's no such a fixed, you know, good and bad separation. But we have to see from different parts that makes us more kind of flexible and gentle and kind to the people who have different idea, and we can share our experience and see and try to find the truth or reality or possibility to see one thing from different perspective and share with other people. I think that is most important point, one of the most important point of Buddhist practice. Not clearly say this is good and this is bad, but trying to find, you know, is this really good or not? And if this is good, why it's good, or why it is not? And there might be some limitation or realms or framework. It can be good, but if we take out this framework, you know, we cannot say this is good or bad. So this is kind of a liberation. And one of the commentary on Nagarjuna's Majjhima Karika, it said, ordinary people, when they have some experience, they create a view based on that experience. And they, you know, start to grasp that view and measure things, you know, after that. But the a person with wisdom, when they had they have the same experience, they negate the view, you know, the person had, that is, and against, you know, this experience. So the point is, you know, what is the point? Whether we create the view and makes it more and more solid, or we try to become more flexible when we encounter each thing. When we encounter certain experience, we try to liberate ourselves from the view that is against this incident. Please.
Maybe this is unfair for some, but is it possible to give an example of that? That kind of situation or choice or, you know, something?
Hmm. I think one example Nagarjuna or the commentator used is when we see something appear, we see, you know, this exists, and we have a view, you know, this is an existent, and grasp this, now this is here. But a person with wisdom said when something appear and looks here in front of the person negate the view of non-existence. Does it make sense?
So ordinary person would look and say this is a real pen and it's really here.
Mm-hmm.
And Nagarjuna's commentator is saying that with practice or wisdom, he looks at the pen and he thinks, what?
try to become free from the idea, opposite of this.
So he might say, I see this as a pen, but it's not necessarily so, something like that? Or it's not so?
When he sees something there, you see, he negates the idea of non-existence. And when he sees something disappear, he becomes free from everything existence.
So
both sides, each time he experiences something, he negates the view instead of creating the view. That is another way we let go of our thought within thinking. So when we have a very difficult, hard, you know, painful experience, we have a view that life is suffering or life is very painful, and we have a negative view about life. But we can use that same painful experience as a way to be liberated from the view that life is good.
Okay, that's what I thought you said. So we're negating.
So life is neither good, basically, life is not near.
So both of those are equally real.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can watch this process by just watching two sports fans.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just right there. This whole world is created.
Yeah.
Totally real.
You know, there's a story in Japan about the tea master. When he was traveling, he stopped by a farm, and at the farming house, he found a dog is eating with a very dirty bowl, and he found that is a very was a you know pottery made in Korea, and within tea, you know, world that is really expensive thing. So he didn't tell the farmer that this is expensive, but he asked the farmer to, you know, sell the pottery with a certain amount of money, very small amount of money. So he was very happy to, you know, get, you know, such a beautiful, it's beautiful. Such a expensive, you know, tea bowl, and he, you know, washed them, and it's really beautiful. But and so he was very proud of, you know, this tea bowl, and used that tea bowl, you know, all the occasions, and it once a person who could really tell this is real thing or not came and said, this is looks like a Korean, you know, pottery, but little different. And so said it's not expensive at all. So that tea master was really disappointed and threw it away. You know, this is a kind of funny story, but a stupid story. But this, you know, the tea bowls, whether it is, you know, used at the farming house, you know, as a bowl for dog's food, and when it was really, you know, washed clean and used at the tea ceremony, you know, same tea pot. But the way viewing things from the farmer's view or dog's view and this person's view, when he found it really, you know, precious bowl, and his view after he found this is not a real thing, you know, all there are all different views, but the, you know, tea bowl itself never changed. It's all there. But our view and our judgment, our value judgment can be really different. That is one of the, this story is used one of the example of, you know, consciousness only, you know, same as a rope could see as a snake, and yet it's not a rope is not really reality yet. Rope, we should see it as a collection of hemp. That is the same as, you know, seeing five skandhas as empty. If we see five skandhas are real things, it's like the rope is real thing. But rope is not really real thing. But rope is just a collection of, you know, fibers. Well, what we are talking. I forget to talk about the kyokun. Anyway, this, you know, viewing one reality from many different perspectives, I think is really important. So if you minutely observe from different viewpoints without absent-mindedness, then naturally the food will integrate the three virtues and include the sixth taste. Well, it's already 8:30. I don't think I need to explain those three virtues and six tastes. It's in the footnote. Or I'll talk next week about three virtues and six tastes. This is not only about the food Tenzo, or the cook prepare, but it's about our life, ourselves, whether we have three virtues and six tastes or not, depending upon how mindful and attentive about ourselves, to ourselves. You know, actually, Tenzo cook the food, but also through the same practice, Tenzo cook his life. So that is why, you know, the title of Uchiyama-roshi's commentary on Tenzo Kyokun is Refining Your Life, but original title in Japanese is Cookbook of Life. So actually, this book is not simply about Tenzo cooking the food, but through this practice, Tenzo cook his life and offer. So our practice is how, you know, this body and mind can, you know, have three virtues and six tastes. That means well balanced, and you know, eatable and tasty. How can we become a tasty and juicy and nutritious person to others? We are the food. I think that is the point of this teaching. Okay. Any questions? Please.
When you were, and I think this is opening up a larger topic, but when we were talking about the bowl,
tea bowl, and so on.
What came to mind is the source of suffering.
Mm-hmm. That is a source of suffering. Sometimes we are happy, sometimes we are miserable. This up and down is suffering. This is a transmigration within six realms. We are sometimes like a heavenly beings, sometimes like a hell dwellers, and sometimes, you know, like, you know, all other conditions. That is so-called suffering in Buddhism. And we don't know that we cannot find a peaceful, you know, foundation of our life. We are just, you know, up and down, go up and down, up and down. We cannot control our life. I think that is what Buddha meant when he said life is suffering. We cannot control life. We cannot find the peaceful foundation of our life. That is suffering. So suffering, when Buddha said everything is suffering, this everything means really everything. That means even the condition we are like a heavenly beings is part of suffering. If we don't have that, you know, very good, happy experience, our life is really terribly or only suffering, then we cannot say, you know, we cannot even call this a suffering, because there's, we know the opposition, you know, this is suffering. You know, if we don't compare, and if we know there is something better, but we cannot get that good thing, then our life, our condition become suffering. Because I know there is something better, but I cannot get that, and I have to be here. That is, I think, source of sense of suffering, I think. So everything within our life becomes suffering unless we find a peaceful foundation of our life. I think that is what Buddha taught. Okay, thank you very much. Mm-hmm.